Well, hello everybody. Welcome to Bikescape, episode number 62. And today is May 7th, 2007. Well, good morning, everybody. I'm sitting in the under the dome of San Francisco's City Hall. Very impressive place. No matter how you feel about government and all that corruption that comes with it, it's still a pretty impressive place to walk into. You walk in, go past security, and then there's this huge, beautiful dome. Great old Beaux-Arts structure. Grand staircase. Climb up the stairs. And everything's marble and beautiful, built in, I don't know, 1908, 1910, something. It was after the earthquake. Top of the staircase is the big supervisor's chambers, and with all the pomp and circumstance and the architecture that you can imagine. I'm sitting across from an old portrait taken, 1916, of the Board of Supervisors chamber, and the Board of Supervisors, our version of City Council, is in full session. Not a female in the house, not in the audience or at the podium or anywhere. Times have changed. So anyway, I'm here today to go and interview present-day supervisor Jake McGoldrick. I helped get him elected after his predecessor went and scuttled car-free Saturdays in the park. It wasn't anything but Michael Yaki campaign. But it turns out that during the campaign, I came to really like Jake McGoldrick. He's a progressive politically, and he's been very friendly for the most part in terms of transportation planning in the city, and he's been very friendly to us cyclists as well. So I'm here to say hi to him. He's graciously given me 45 minutes of his busy day on a Thursday, and I took the day off, so I'm going to go interview Jake. Supervisor McGoldrick, thank you for being on Bikescape.
Thanks, John. Yeah, sure.
So you've been, well, first of all, I should thank you for your work on Golden Gate Park.
Well,
there was a Chronicle article, and your name didn't get mentioned. You sponsored the legislation.
So. Well, you know, if you really are doing something that's community-based, thank goodness the community came around that one. You know the situation. We had a lot of folks opposing this for years and years. It goes back 40 years, this issue, you know, to the time of Jack Morrison, Jane. Jack was a supervisor and so on. Jane, his wife in her mid-80s, has persisted all these years, you know, and a lot of organizations involved in this, particularly the Bike Coalition, really stuck with it. But you know, folks who just care about, you know, making urban life not just tolerable but indeed enjoyable, and without the, you know, without good places to go to, just to get away from the traffic, get away from the din and the noise of traffic, and be able to recreate in ways, as we know, that have to do with pedals and bicycles and skate wheels and everything else, and just to be able to be in that area and say no cars cutting through. It's not just being on that piece of road there, which, you know, we got repaved last year, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It's nice and smooth and wonderful to you know, ambulate on that, but the areas around there then become much more quiet and much more pastoral, you know. So
yeah,
it's nice.
People in this town worry whenever you want to close a road to cars. I mean, we talked years ago about trying to close Market Street to cars,
right?
And boy, did that cause a reaction in this town.
Oh, it's amazing. I mean, I've been to cities. I'll take Berlin for example, where they've closed sections to cars. It's a fantastic experience. You know, Holland, you go to Amsterdam, you can go to lots of places all over. Little towns, small towns in England. I go to England, my wife is British, and where they've closed the areas of towns off to cars, and people are just, you know, able to circulate and walk around.
In Paris, they took a whole section of a major road and turned it into a beach.
On the
Quai. Paris Plage.
Yeah, a part of the Quai. I lived in Paris for about 5 years.
Yeah,
I'm half French. My birth name is Jean-Luc.
Okay.
But anyway, we don't need that today. But yeah, the Plage, the new mayor there, what he did for the folks, the folks who can't necessarily get out of town, particularly during the season when most folks do get out of town and out of Paris for the months of July and August in particular. When I lived there, it was like Paris was almost a ghost town, or it was occupied by tourists in July and August,
yeah.
And the real Parisians, as they used to call them, if there's an unreal Parisian, we're all gone, you know.
Yeah.
So anyway, Paris along the Seine, along the quay, as they call it, you know, the docks.
Right.
You know?
Well, Paris was redesigned 100 years ago, but in San Francisco, you look at this downtown area and south of Market, and the streets were all designed before the advent of the automobile. Yet, and we had four tracks for streetcars on Market Street.
That's right.
A very efficient way to get around. And if you look at old movies from 1905, you can see people walking. There were no sidewalks even. People walked in the street. It was a different landscape.
Right.
And then something happened. I guess the car companies bought up all the streetcar companies, all that stuff happened, and so we have a different history than the Europeans do. It's all been car oriented since then. And as we look at the future, you know, the new Mission Bay coming in, and residents downtown becoming a 24-hour area.
Right.
How do you see the future of downtown?
Well,
transportation
near-term future and long-term future, let's say. Near-term future means having to struggle with the concept that the car has been king for especially since World War II. That folks still have this feeling that, the kind of liberation to move that came with cars is something folks don't want to give up. And you have to recognize that. You have to recognize in the history of humanity, let's take the last 1,000 years or so, only the rich could afford to go, more than 30 kilometers or miles or whatever you want away from the village where they were born.
Right.
So the cars sort of gave people, working class, middle class people, an opportunity to move. So what we've got to do is say, what is the desired effect that people are seeking? Well, it's the ability to go to places and to the wonderful experience of, travel.
Right.
And that wasn't available through most of human history for most folks, to say, except those who were very wealthy could keep stables and horses and so on and so on and so on. So, when you look at that and you say, how do we provide for what folks want, which is the ability to travel? Well, we can do it by, conceiving and implementing plans that have to do with providing mass transit opportunities and providing good, convenient mass transit just within the urban area. You take London. I go to London a lot.
I was going to bring up London.
I go to London. I'm going there in 2 or 3 weeks again. And I've been there, 50, 60, 70 times. 36 years I've been with my wife, who's British. We go there a lot. I have a sister who lives there and so on. And met the mayor of London and talked to him about what he was doing with his congestion management plan. One of the things they point out is, 85, 86, 87% of the people in London at any given time are there through public transit. They're using the Transport for London system, the tubes and, the underground, and they're using the surface vehicles, buses, that's the kind of city. And what a wonderful city London is. I mean, what an incredible city. It's one of the 3, 4, 5 great cities in the history of the world, and continues to be so. It goes back to Londonium, as it was called, when the Romans came in and so on. So the deal here is, how do we, in the urban environment, make it a really viable option for people to use vehicles in which they are transported along with the other residents and denizens and citizens with whom they cohabitate in an urban environment? And you've got to do two things. One, you've got to invest in that system, but you've also got to clear the streets.
Right, because the thing that gave us the freedom is also causing the congestion now.
I mean, that was it. I mean, you can't start knocking down buildings and saying, oh, we're going to make even bigger freeways, or make two-layer, three-layer roads. I mean, the freeways that was along the Embarcadero that, the act of God and nature took down, and the act of a very courageous mayor, Art Agnos, took down. Art probably didn't get a second term because he had the courage to stand and say, no, that thing's got to come down. It was unsafe, but it certainly had to come down, but it wasn't going to get rebuilt, and that's where Art stood ground and said, we've got to figure out a way to make a much better urban environment. And so, as it took 100 years for the car to become king, so to speak, I hope that in less than 100 years, 40, 50 years, we're turning it around. And you know who really gets this is younger people. Younger people get it more than the older people, because the older folks, are in the habit more of driving their cars. again, as you get older, it's harder to drive your car because your eyes go on you. I'm getting older myself, so I know the feeling. But you know, you've got to make it affordable to people. You've got to make it an option that is inevitable to people, in the sense that people also have a consciousness, the old tipping point idea, the consciousness that you can't go on cooking the earth by the pollution that's created by these vehicles. We're shifting over, obviously. I mean, I'm talking to the choir, whoever's listening to this, I'm sure.
The choir needs to hear it sometimes.
But we're shifting over, and we're doing it in bits and pieces. Unless you have a consciousness, an awareness of history, and realize we got to where we were kind of step by step by step by step, you know, whether, you know, it was the vehicles and the that were created, Ford's mass assembly lines that produced, you know, a cheap thing called the Model A, the Model T, and so on like that. And all of a sudden, everybody, oh my goodness, you know, the people working on those assembly lines could actually afford to buy them. That was one of the key things, as you know, in the history with Ford. Ford said the people who make these have to be able to afford to buy them, take something out of their weekly paychecks, and they become, you know, the best marketeers for the products they're producing. Well, you know, step by step, Eisenhower, of course, the whole issue with Eisenhower, you know, creating the national federal, you know, highway system. Mm-hmm. So you have a national highway system for defense purposes that also then, of course, became for commerce purposes. At that time, something people felt was very useful. You know, all the Teamsters and the truckers that could move products and goods and so on across the country in, you know, a matter of, you know, days and hours and so on, rather than weeks and months and so on. It transformed our domestic commerce.
Right.
So you recognize all that and you say, okay, all those things we still have to get as functions that we need, the functions of moving products. Well, you can move products by trains that are cleaner. You know, go back to the trains. It's funny how we have to go back to the future. Right?
Yes, it is. Well, it was during the height of boom of the freeway system that San Francisco became the forefront. San Francisco and New York both became the forefront of the freeway revolt.
Yeah,
we refused to have a freeway going through the panhandle. I think that was Morrison, too, that fought that.
Oh, Jack was involved in that. With Jane Morrison, Sue Bierman, Willie Brown jumped in there. You know, I mean, that was one of Willie's starting points.
Today we have a much better cityscape because of that revolt. But we always have resistance from people, from merchants. It's funny, you mentioned London, and one thing they call Ken Livingstone Red Ken because he's a socialist.
Right.
But he took a page from Milton Friedman, from the conservative, who actually came up with the idea 20, 30 years ago of congestion charging, in where you charge people to come into downtown. And it had a lot of opposition from merchants and from the very rich people who lived in the downtown areas that were going to get closed off, but he overcame it somehow. And I'm wondering that when you started a study, 2 years ago, you commissioned a study, $1.3 million to...
Well, it started about 8 months ago. I started trying to get the money 2 years ago. We got the money after about a year and a half or so. But go ahead, sorry.
We're looking at the same thing. And just the mention of a study has got some people just freaked out. I mean, you see the first thing the Chronicle said was, you know, that they're socially engineering us, and you know, people want to drive, and it's gonna cut off the economics. What's your answer to how do you deal with the opposition? How did Ken Livingstone do it?
Well, in fact, Ken Livingstone, he gave me his report on this, the third year report. They've got the fourth year report out now, and he was here in San Francisco, and I told him I was, you know, moving on some of the congestion stuff, and he gave me his book. He said, "To Red Jake from Red Ken," because he said, "They're going to call you a Red." I said, "Okay, whatever." But at any rate, what he said was, he says, small businesses, above all, didn't quite get it, because small businesses don't have the kind of, organizational structure to hire folks to do policy analysis. He says big business got it in London. He said you'll see that big business will understand that the
Spur is behind it.
Well, this is it. I mean, and Spur is, you know, works with the big business community, and it turns out, in fact, the San Francisco Business Times about 2 months ago wrote an editorial very much in favor of congestion pricing.
Interesting.
They came to understand it. They didn't necessarily attribute it to me, but that's all right. I'm not a publicity pig. But at any rate, the deal is they get it. They get it. And that's just what he had told me about 2 years ago on this. He said, you'll find your opposition to small business, because folks don't know, you know, and so you got to talk and figure it out. But in fact, what you're going to find is because you decongest and clear up the streets and you move people through better, you're actually going to create greater efficiency for business. Right. Because folks are not going to be late to work as often. Folks are going to be able to move around during the day, middle of the day.
They'll have choices on how to get there.
Folks will come in. Yeah, folks will come into the area. And when you have a mixed-use area, London's very mixed-use. A lot of small businesses on the ground floors, you know, the kind of thing that we have in some parts of San Francisco. And that we're very desirous of seeing more of that.
Mm-hmm.
He said, you'll see that folks will eventually get it and realize it's good, you know. And their analysis was showing no net negative effect in the third year, and you know, so it was beginning to become
actually a lot of positive effect. They got rid of 30% of their car traffic.
Well, that was it. That was it, you know. But the first thing, you know, some small businesses. I'll go back to that. The small businesses were worried that you know, folks wouldn't come and, you know, buy shoes and socks and, you know, balloons for parties and all the millions of things that people buy and all the small places a lot, and in fact it's working. Yeah, but the reductions that were in the 17-18% area in terms of the congestion, 30% more people you know, getting out of their cars and getting onto public transport. It's transit, but they call it transport.
So the money that you get charged for driving into the town, into the congestion area, that money goes where?
It goes right back into public transit. It all goes back into public transit. So you're basically you know, eliminating the problem or eroding the problem, hopefully, you know, at both ends. And I went to, about a year ago, back in March of 06, I went to Stockholm to visit their program. They
Another
had just
one,
put
yes.
it in place. And I went with a couple of folks from the San Francisco County Transportation Authority. And Jose Luis Moscovich, he's our executive director, and you know, one of the real luminaries in terms of statewide issues, but he's, thank God, staying with us in the city. And we went and looked at what they were doing, met with folks from their city hall, and they were delighted. They had set up a program with IBM. They had 17 points where, because they're an island there, that central part, and there's like lots of islands, you know, all that area around Stockholm. They were able to set up these various stations where they capture through transponders the folks going through at different times. They have a different system than London. London just has a flat fee. You come in at a certain time.
Camera takes a picture of your license plate.
You got it.
And you get charged.
You have to pay, you know, and so on and so on and so on by the end of the day. You can pay by phone, but through the internet and so on. It's just a flat fee. In what they've done in Stockholm is have what they call variable pricing or dynamic pricing. If you come in a certain time, you pay X. If you come in at another time when it's the highest time of congestion, you pay X plus Y, you know, a little more. So you pay, I think, in fact, it translated to like $1.30 in you know, American money. If you came in another time, you paid $1.70. If you came in another time, you paid, you know, 50 cents. Come in another time, you pay nothing. So they're trying to say, you know, they know when the worst congestion is and see if people can make some choices around that. Everybody can't, so you recognize that. So, you know, it's not out to ding people for a lot of bucks. But, you know, in recognition of the fact a lot of people could make choices to come in earlier or come in a little later, that has really cleared up a lot for Stockholm. And you're in the 30% range there, too. Taxi drivers I spoke with, especially, because, you know, you ask the people in the field, hey, you'd hop in a taxi. You know, another form of public transport, taxis.
Right.
So you ask.
Natural enemy of bicyclists, but still public transit.
Oh, it's a battle. It's a battle. So, well, we'll get back to that issue, too, about, you know, what to do. But the taxi drivers say, wow, it's amazing. They felt the difference. They felt the difference.
Yeah. Oh, I think the biggest problem in London was that the buses were running ahead of schedule because they had too much room in front of them.
Well, once they put the program in place.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. The head times, what do they call them? But, yeah, they were they had to make adjustments.
They had
there.
To change the schedules.
You know, you can then run your buses and have more frequency. Instead of waiting 10 minutes for a bus, you cut it down to 9 and 8 and 7. Instead of waiting 6, you're down to 5 and 4.
So on the left, you have criticism from people saying, you know, you're charging for something that should be free, although there's all sorts of external costs in driving that don't get mentioned.
Oh, yeah.
On the right, you say, well, they say, you're going to stifle the economy.
Yeah.
And it's funny because on both sides you have an answer. You can say to the people on the left, but yes, we're charging the drivers, but now you're going to have a bigger choice of how to get into the city. So how would you imagine the city streets changing in order to accommodate people to? This is a roundabout way of asking the question, but how would you imagine this? Would you see more bike lanes, for instance, or more buses or more bus lines, or how would you? well, balance the other end.
All of the above. I mean, you know, I mean, if we can see a 15, 17, 18, whatever, you know, percent, let alone if we were to hit 30%, you know, within a year or two reduction, I mean, it would really transform San Francisco, particularly at certain times of the day. Why don't a lot of people want to go shopping? We're putting these big shopping, you know, sort of vertical shopping malls in downtown. Mm-hmm. Why do people go to the horizontal shopping malls and go get, you know, and go get their needs met there? Well, because going downtown San Francisco, they feel they get mauled, M-A-U-L-E-D, trying to get in and out of those areas. If you can get on public transport, again, I'll take Berlin, for example, one of the biggest department store in all of continental Europe is called KDW, Kaufmann des Westens. It's in the heart of Berlin. Well, people don't drive to KDW. People take the U-Bahn, the S-Bahn, the buses, and they said the U-Bahn and the S-Bahn are two different train systems they have there in Berlin. Again, another one of the great cities in the history of the world. It's a fantastic place. You know, 90% of the people that are in all that central part of Berlin are there through public transport, you know, and it's fine. You're on the same as true in London. You're standing on the bus with some, or the train, or the underground, or whatever, U-Bahn, S-Bahn, with somebody who's wearing a $3,000 suit and has, you know, an expensive leather case, and they're going to work for some, you know, big corporation. And you got, I remember this in London recently, another fella 5 feet away, he's got his tool chest, he's going somewhere, and he's, you know, a carpenter, a plasterer or something. That's how he was traveling.
Yeah.
So, right. Folks, it mixes people in the most democratic way. That was one of the things I've always noticed all these years, you know, and I lived in Paris for five years.
Paris, you see women in furs on the... On the subway,
you know,
in the metro.
That's it. So, you know, nobody's trying to run around with you know, chauffeur-driven limos. You know, the democratization, if you would, of space, public space, is one of the interesting factors in all of this. But yeah, again, in terms of folks saying, oh, it's bad for business, I think even as I mentioned earlier, the Business Times even recognizes, and folks in the downtown, you know, sort of high-rise business recognize that public transport's the only way to go. And, you know, we've been approving more and more dense development. I was the chair of the Land Use Committee for the first 4 years here. This is my seventh year. I'm still on the Land Use Committee. I'll stay on it till the end. The end being because you have term limits.
Yeah, you got, what, 2 more years left, huh?
Yeah, about a year and something. So we approved 20,000 units of housing, mostly over in the eastern side of town, mostly close to the Job Corps area. And we know that that's good. You know, the Democrats have a phrase called smart growth. The Republicans didn't want to use the same phrase because the Democrats had co-opted it. So the Republicans called it new urbanism. You know, it's the same deal.
Yeah.
It's have people live as close as possible to where they work.
Right.
And, you know, that's great for the environment. It's great for, you know, all the levels of concern we have, including social and economic factors. People mixing 24 hours a day, you know, areas are vibrant. You know, 30, 35, 40 years ago, when you looked at downtowns like San Francisco, all those big buildings after 6 o'clock at night were like tombstones in a graveyard. And on the weekends, again, you know, graveyard, no activity, no nothing, just dead in those areas. You know, you've got that in some areas in Silicon Valley down around San Jose.
Yeah, big buildings with parking lots, office parks.
Yeah, the office park phenomena. And I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, another generation is going to look at that and say, hey, let's build housing all around here and sprinkle it all together.
It's going to become untenable when the price of gas gets to $6, $7 an hour on a gallon.
Yeah. So, but you know, paying, as you say, there's all these other costs associated with the vehicles on the roads. Germany put together, for example, I went to the German Bundestag and I visited some members of the German, you know, parliament.
It's been nice to be able to do that.
I know. It was like, okay, you know, I have my frequent flyer miles or whatever. You know, and actually my wife was working in Berlin. I knew a couple of folks I had met here. And I said, well, gee, you know, it costs the city nothing. I never asked the city for anything on this stuff. And I said, gee, if you got a hotel room, I stay, and my wife, and then I go visit something while she goes and does her job, you know. But anyway, they've put in a congestion pricing system on their autobahns, on their freeways and all that. They started with trucks to get greater efficiency. And then one of the things you get out of this is people become more efficient in their use of the resources, being the roads, right, and their vehicles or whatever. I mean, we're not going to go back.
So it's basically just toll roads where the prices vary depending on the condition.
And they charge them by the kilometer because they use the kilometers. and for the trucks. And the first year, they found a 17% greater efficiency in the use of the time of the drivers and the use of the trucks and the vehicles with the companies that were then had to pay for the use of the roads. And they took in about 3 billion euros, about $4 billion the first year. That's nationwide, a country the size of Montana or so. There's got 80 million people in it. They have to really manage, you know, the whole country to keep the place viable, you know. And they're very smart about it, I think. You know, so I met with these folks, and they were very impressed with the first year results. And it was just the first year. I went there again about a year and a half ago.
Yeah. You can imagine toll roads on the 101, or why not?
It's coming. You know, they've got some of these roads in Southern California, you know, where they're starting to charge. And, you know, they've got toll roads back. I grew up back in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, Jersey, the turnpike. The old turn of the end. There was actually a pike, which is a pole. I think it was Benjamin Franklin, first came up with the idea that you'd pay to use a road. Some private, way back 200 and some years ago, some private interest would invest and create a road that would be a better kept, smoother, maintained.
Paying the full cost.
And you would pay the cost for using that road.
People complain about the price of a gallon of gas, but they don't
turn the pike.
They don't think of the price of the freeway or the CHP, the emergency rooms or the asthma people get, or any of that's all externalized costs.
Externalized costs. Yeah. I mean, and when you start factoring that in, you realize that there's a tremendous subsidy for cars. And if we would even to put percentage-wise that kind of subsidy into public transit, we'd create such a wonderful public transit system, and so many people would say, "Hey, why would I use my car when I can, you know, go down the road, go down the street, hop on a vehicle, be there in, you know, no time flat, bam, convenient." Yeah. Safe and so on, yeah.
And it would make for a more. Would you say it would make for a leading question? Would you say it would make for a more convivial society downtown?
Well,
in the city,
it's all about conviviality. I remember when Ivan Illich wrote about conviviality and the need for people to learn to, you know, respect the situations that other people have. We know, for example, that the ownership of cars. For example, in San Francisco, 29% of people don't own cars. Mm-hmm. Well, a lot of those folks didn't do that because of environmental awareness or consciousness or, you know, epiphanies about
because of our transit
ecology.
First policy, I guess, isn't
well,
it?
Well, some of them do it because they do recognize that, and others do it because they can't afford to have a car.
Right.
A car is a very expensive adventure in life, you know. Mm-hmm. So, and you say, okay, if we can give people other choices, certainly we can start with the pocketbook, you know, as they say in a lot of politics, you know. People vote their pocketbooks. Mm-hmm. We can show people that you know, we can use their tax monies in a wise way to invest in public transit in a way in which we transform the way we behave. If we had the public transit system that even Mexico City, you go to Mexico City, it costs you a peso or something, you know, very little. Yeah, well, last time I was there, it was about 2 cents in American dollars, but the revaluation of money. I haven't been down there.
It's a great system,
a dozen
too.
Years
works really
so.
Well.
It's incredible.
Mm-hmm.
It's incredible. A city with, 18, 19, 20 million people.
I wouldn't ride a bike there.
Rough. It works. It works, you know. So, I mean, I just taking a place that most people in North America, United States, might not know, Mexico City. But, boy, transport's pretty good there. Pretty good.
So maybe once we were able to get the congestion under control, we could start thinking about new planning, such as, we have these what we call congestion management streets, like Howard and Folsom, all the big one-way streets that are just feeders to the freeway. In a way of making that neighborhood a little more convivial, if we can... If we could reduce the traffic on there, turn it into two-way streets, maybe put medians, turn all those big traffic sewers into Valencia Street type of environments.
It's the Grand Boulevard, the French Haussmann, around the Arc of Triumph. It's that image. They have great boulevards, you know, and great boulevards are wonderful with, you know, big sidewalks where people can gather. Mm-hmm. Activities.
Imagine Howard Street like
people.
That. Yeah.
Sorry?
Imagine Howard Street.
Well, you know, we're trying to do something actually down the last few blocks of Folsom before you would hit the waterfront. Mm-hmm. We've got some developments down there. We got some money. This is not the Rincon Hill plan. It's pre-Rincon Hill. But where we've got monies to improve and widen the sidewalks and do plantings and, you know, have benches where people can gather. And then you try to attract businesses that are going to attract people, you know, the cafe society, if you want to call it or whatever, you know, without the snobbery of cafe society.
It would be nice to have people sitting on the sidewalk drinking something.
But this is it. You know, people
talking and
doing something. You know, I mean, you know,
looking at each other, overhearing conversations.
You know, parks, micro parks, mini parks, small parks, squares, as they call them in places like London, where people can gather, and then you know, businesses around where people work, and the various kinds of activities in places, storefronts where people really gather, rather than get bunched up in malls, you know, and it's and you know, the isolation of experience rather than the integration of experience, the urban experience. You know, because it's like, oh, this is where we go to church, and, you know, this is where we go to shop, and this is where we go for our entertainment. Mm-hmm. Well, if we can approximate all those, and this is where we live, of course, too, and this is where we work, and so on. Mm-hmm. If we can approximate that, this is where we recreate, this is where, and have that integration of activities in a way in which there's a vibrancy about that conviviality, as you say, too. That's good planning. That's good planning. I mean, cities weren't terribly well planned. They were kind of spontaneously grew up as, you know, you look at it.
There was a plan for San Francisco.
Industrial Revolution, in a sense.
Daniel Burnham came up with a plan.
Yeah,
it just
Daniel
didn't
Burnham.
Happen.
A piece did, but the rest didn't. The earthquake hit. Mm-hmm. Daniel Burnham and, the Chicago folks, they certainly were on the forefront of, Chicago Fire. You know, after the Chicago Fire, a lot more planning after the earthquake here than, you know.
Unfortunately, it came at the same time as the automobile.
And that became the dominant feature, Now we're working on, we're working on stuff. We have all these titles and names for it: better streets and
complete streets,
green streets and complete streets and better, best. Superlative. We can use all the words, but what does it mean? It means making places, and I like your word, and convivial places where people feel comfortable. You don't just go and do your shopping and then run away from the area.
Place you come
to,
hang out, just go through it.
Hang out a bit. You're comfortable. The public forum. You know, the need for public forums is very important. When we have the isolation in our culture that's occurring with people sitting in front of TVs and people sitting in front of computers and, you know, not interacting much.
Right.
I spent a year in Guatemala in the mid-60s working as a social worker, missionary thing I did. And every night, you know, there wasn't much electricity around, but every night people would go out and do a paseo. Mm-hmm. And you had places where you'd go, and there'd be, you know, music most of the time, and somebody, just local folks coming out and playing their music. And, you walk around, and it was boy meets girl kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But it was people meet people kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And it was wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. And everybody would pour out of their places and come out most nights, you know. And you'd walk around, and you'd meet one another, you know. And then you'd stop and pause, and then you maybe go get, you know, something to eat or something, you know. Whatever.
all the things that make a great city.
Yeah, these were little towns. In the one in particular I was in was Jalapa in Guatemala. Mm-hmm. Wonderful stuff, you know.
Oh, well, thanks a lot. You know, I have all these notes. I didn't even take a look at them. I didn't ask about BRTs or Geary Boulevard I think we actually went in a better direction. So,
Bus rapid transit is a good way to move folks, and we're moving forward on that. There is some sort of squeaky wheel opposition, but I think the facts will speak to that louder than just folks who are putting their head in the sand.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. Well, thanks a lot, Jake. I really appreciate you making time. Busy schedule.
Great, John. Yeah, that's good. Thanks. Just do it more often. Man.
Okay. Yeah, that'd be great. We'll talk about BRTs next time.
Yeah.
All right.
Happy to.
All right. Well, thanks.
Yeah.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that interview with Jake McGoldrick. I'm sitting out here. It's the first really nice hot day of the year. Maybe the second hot day. Yesterday was Sunday. Today, Got out of work early and because it's just so nice out, and I thought I'd do the podcast outdoors today. Sitting out in Union Square, you might hear a cable car bell as it goes by. I'm surrounded by fancy stores, Macy's, Lord & Taylor's, Saks Fifth Avenue, fancy hotels, the St. Francis Hotel, and cable cars, very chic-looking people walking around, going shopping, people from all over the world, some Japanese tourists taking pictures, and somebody just took a picture of me on the talking on the computer, but I think he was interested in the juxtaposition of Fixie and computer or something. Very San Francisco, I guess he thinks. Anyway, here we are, and I wanted to, get to what's going on in the world of bicycles. Let's start with New York this week, shall we? Well, first of all, happy Bike Month. May is the bike month across the country, maybe around the world, I'm not sure. And in New York, they're looking for volunteers for Bike Month. Some of the things that they need, different events, they need people to do tabling, update press releases. There's the Folds Up Bike Festival, I'll get to that later. All these different things that they'll be needing. So if you need any, if you'd like to help out, give Times Up a call. They are at times-up.org on the internet. And you can find everything you need to get there. They're at 40. Also, their storefront's at 49 East Houston Street in lovely Manhattan, New York. Let's see. They're going to be showing a couple of movies on May 10th at 8 p.m. On Thursday at their place on Houston Street. The movies are free, but they're taking donations, and they ask you to bring some popcorn. They are showing The Warriors, which is a great New York movie, and also Still We Ride, because they do still ride in New York. They have Critical Mass last Friday of the month. They're running into trouble here and there, but it's still happening. The one Critical Mass that's very nice in New York that doesn't, that maybe gets overlooked now and then, that actually has no action, any negative action at least, is the Brooklyn Critical Mass. Friday, May 11th is the next one. That'll be at 7 p.m. Grand Army Plaza, the north entrance of Prospect Park, where Flatbush, Eastern Parkway, Union Street, and Prospect Park West intersect. So that's that. There's also going to be a small-wheeled bike race Saturday, May 12th at 1 p.m. at Bethesda Terrace. That is in Central Park at 72nd Street, overlooking the fountain. Let's see what they say. It says, spin your little wheels. Free entry. Prizes offered. You're limited to 20 inches or less on your wheel size. Spectators are encouraged, and after the race, a group will ride down the greenway to the start of the Folds Up Ride. And what is the Folds Up Ride, you may ask? Well, as I turn the page, I'll let you know here. Folds Up is a leisurely 10-mile ride through Manhattan and Brooklyn showcasing folding bicycles. But, of course, all kinds of bikes are welcome, but as long as the riders are curious about folding bikes. The race is for bicycle. The ride is for bicycles, skates, skateboards, scooters, or anything else that moves without polluting the air. But it's got to focus on folding bikes, which are very popular in New York. They're good for bringing on the subway and whatnot, getting around short distances. They're also having the Folds Up Folding Bike Festival Saturday, May 12th, that same day at 4 p.m. at the Stuyvesant Cove Park, East 23rd Street at the East River. You can learn all about folding bicycles and see and try out different models. And there's going to be refreshments courtesy of Swift Folder. So you can check all this stuff out on the Times Up site, times-up.org, once again. It's summer in New York, and there's a lot of good things happening. One great tradition in New York with the Times Up people is the Prospect Park Moonlight Ride. Also on that day, boy, what are you going to be tired when you go to bed Saturday night? May 12th, 9 p.m. at night. Starts at Grand Army Plaza at the northern entrance to the Prospect Park, where Flatbush Avenue, Eastern Parkway, Union Street, and Prospect Park West intersect. So they're asking you to join for a totally safe, auto-free ride as we explore Prospect Park at night. Enjoy the peace and tranquility of the fields, the woods, and the pond. Bike guides in the front and the back. Bring your favorite bike, the one with the lights. And the park is dark at night, they're warning you. What else have we got? Let's just turn the page. There's going to be a tour. History, Mystery, Murder, and Money Tour, a.k.a. the Lower Manhattan Historic Ride, Saturday, May 19th at 10 p.m. It's at the Manhattan entrance to the Brooklyn Bridge, southwest corner of Chambers and Center Street, Park Row. Visit the glamorous and notorious Lower Manhattan's most favorite spots, famous spots in history. Infamy and unparalleled opulence is what they're saying. Oh, let's see. The next day, on May 20th, there's going to be a peace ride at 1 p.m., meeting at Union Square Park on the southwest corner near the Gandhi statue. Fitting. A leisurely, peaceful ride to some of downtown Manhattan's peace sites. In a time when terror and cruelty are spreading around the globe, there has never been a greater need to work together for a more peaceful planet. Let us ride for peace. Peace on our bikes, peace in our hearts, peace in our city, peace in our country, and, of course, peace on the whole planet. Stops include Point Thank You, Robert Wagner Park, the Labyrinth for Contemplation, Fritz Koenig's The Sphere, the Vietnam Vet Memorial, and the site of the Mother AME Zion Church. And then there's all the other little things that are happening in New York, like, you know, the weekly bike repair workshop in the Time's Up space in their basement at 49 East Towson Street once again. Check the website. They also have, every Monday at 6:30, they have a women and transsexual bicycle repair night at 6:30. Learn the basics of bicycle repair from female mechanics. And finally, from New York, another news. You may remember we had a podcast a while back about pedicabs at the crossroads in New York. Well, it looks like even though the mayor vetoed legislation that would have limited pedicabs to a number far below the number that exists today, it looks like the city council has gone ahead and overridden the veto. So here's the press release. While the City Council of New York deliberates the fate of green transportation, green transporters are taking the matter to the streets. Christine Quinn has been marshaling council members to get on the special interest bandwagon and ban pedicabs. Myths have been told about that pedicabs are unsafe, have three-cylinder motors, and cause traffic congestion. The reality of the matter is that pedicabs are safe, environmentally friendly, and scare the taxi industry, who just so happened to have a direct line to Quinn, who, according to a recent Daily News editorial, is best friends with the industry lobbyist. On Earth Day, Mayor Bloomberg gave a historic speech saying that we can't wait for Washington to start making a difference. The pedicab industry feels the same way. That's why this Monday they will be visiting all five boroughs in their cabs. This is some in the past now, emulating their fellow cyclists on the five borough pedicab tour. That happened a while back, but I just wanted to update the Bikescapers on that. Let's see, here in San Francisco, it's also Bike Month here, just like everywhere else, and we're looking for volunteers here, too. I am going to a meeting on Wednesday night to find out. I'm going to be a captain myself of a bike station, bike refreshment station, over by the Caltrain station in the evening, so come by and say hi if you like to. And that'll be May 17th, Bike to Work Day, and we're looking for volunteers, the Bike Coalition is. You can be a bike buddy. You can ride with someone who's never ridden before, help them through the traffic, teach them the ropes. You can be a volunteer in many ways. Let's see. Flipping through my papers that are getting blown in the wind here. The Energizer stations are the main thing you can do. You can get up early in the morning. You can work in the evening, handing out sandwiches or apples or bananas or bagels or whatever, and propaganda. It's a great thing to do. It's kind of fun. You get to go out and meet your fellow cyclists. Everybody loves to stop at the Energizer stations and check it out. So you're there for them. Just a little volunteer, a little celebration of bike commuting on the way to work. There's going to be a team bike challenge to see who can travel the most days by bicycle during the month of May. Every day, this is, you can join your friends and coworkers and neighbors and, you know, try and convert them to the cause. Every day your team pedals, you gain points and the opportunity to win cool prizes. This year, the SFBC is putting together a team at our office, and we challenge to get in on the fun with your own team. So you can sign up and track your progress at 511.org. I skipped something here. I want to get back to that. The Golden Wheel Awards. Every year, can you hear me? Every year, the Bike Coalition has an award ceremony. It's a big fundraiser. This year, I just wanted to mention the winner is going to be Cash. He's going to win the Golden Wheel Award for his work as a champion of bike parking and all the little nuts and bolts of bicycle advocacy in this town. So that's happening Wednesday. You're going to miss it, but I just wanted to let you know that Cash is the lucky winner of that one. Bridge the Gap. Bike pedestrian path is needed on the Bay Bridge. If you don't know, the Bay Bridge is being rebuilt here, the link between San Francisco and Oakland. And the odd thing is there's going to be a bike lane built on the new part of the bridge that's being built right now. But that just connects Oakland and the island of Yerba Buena Island. The other hop across the next bridge to the city of San Francisco does not have a bike lane. So we need to deal with that. And it's going to cost some money, and I think it would actually be a wonderful thing and a great tourist attraction, and it's only 7 miles to the other side of the bay. It's a beautiful ride, too. I can imagine how great that would be. Support Complete Streets across California. The Bike Coalition will be in Sacramento speaking for AB 1358, the California Complete Streets Act of 2007, sponsored by San Francisco Assemblyman Mark Leno. Complete Streets means designing and building streets that work well for all modes, pedestrians, cyclists, transit, motorists, and making sure streets accommodate people of all abilities and ages with safety and dignity. San Francisco has already adopted Complete Streets policies and is in the process of creating a better streets plan to make these policies real. AB 1358 would make Complete Streets the law of the land across California, modifying the requirements for developing city and county general plans to account for the needs of bicyclists and pedestrians when designating their transportation plans. So many thanks to Assemblyman Leno for his leadership on this key issue. And you can check it out at the California Bicycle Coalition website, the CBC. And as you know, all of the links, anything mentioned in the show, you can find links over at the blog, bikescape.blogspot.com. Which brings us to the end of the show, I guess. I guess I should tell you that there's a few shows in the works. Let's see, I'm not sure what order they're going to come in, but there's going to be a show about bike polo. My friend Michael and the gang have bike polo every week in Golden Gate Park, and I went down there and got some interviews and some sounds, and they're either on their way or maybe already in Ireland at the Bike Polo World Championships. So they must be having a great time right now in Ireland. And if you're in Ireland, check it out. Look at the blog, bikescape.blogspot.com, and see if you can find the link. And I'll try and find a link to what's going on over there in Ireland. Maybe you can drop in and say hi. Also, I spent some time with BORP, the Bay Area Outreach and Recreational Program. These are the people that take people who that help people out who are in wheelchairs or otherwise unable to walk, and they play basketball. And one of the things that they do that they're famous for is they have a bicycling program. And it's an amazing, amazing, amazing thing to see people riding bicycles who never thought they could or thought they wouldn't be able to again. So I got some really great sound and audio from an outing in Golden Gate Park a couple weeks ago already. It's going to be a while before I get it out there. But stay subscribed, if only for that one show. It's going to take me a while to put it together, and lots of little recordings that have to be edited. But it's going to be worth it in the end. It's going to be really great. If you have anything you'd like to criticize or comment on or just send plain old hate mail, you can send it to me. It's bikescape@sbcglobal.net. You can leave incendiary comments at the blog, bikescape.blogspot.com. Bikescape is found on iTunes. You can subscribe there. You can subscribe through Dig. You can subscribe many different ways, anywhere, any place where podcasts are sold, Odeo, all those places. So I guess it's the end of the show, and let's see, I just want to exhort everybody to drive your bike like it's a vehicle, only much better. And keep your eyes on that road, keep the rubber side down, and don't forget to take the lane. Bye now.